Hey, everyone. Want to listen to two comedians who sometimes like talking about important things, but they still want the podcast to be funny, but they're worried about being insensitive, and they're honestly trying their best, so please be nice to them. They are so fragile. Today's book is Invisible Women by Caroline Criado Perez.
I'm Kellen Erskine. I'm a comic and a visible man.
And I'm David Vance. This book was recommended to me by a female friend, and I'm still deciding how personally to take that. In Invisible Women, Caroline Criado Perez talks about the way women get ignored by healthcare, economics, and many other fields, but not by me, Dave, who is a great listener.
And this is The Book Pile.
All right, quick reminder to please rate and review The Book Pile. We are very thankful to everyone who has so far. Your challenge this week is to leave Kellen a compliment so unambiguous he can't find something to be insecure about.
So a reviewer named Perpleximon or Perpleximon says, "This is the easiest way to make yourself feel like you've read a book."
Hey, same for us.
And the subject of the review is, quote, "consistently great." I want everyone to know that Dave and I, especially I, put a lot of work into each of these to make them consistently great. If you haven't listened to all the past episodes, or if you're part of that group that up until now has you've only listened to books that you've read, I ask you to soften your heart, because to me, some of my favorite episodes and the ones that I think are the funniest are the books Tidying Up, Steve Jobs, and The Power of Habit. Check those out. Power of Habit, like, even if you don't want to change your life, we've got some good jokes in there.
Okay, before we start, I want to get one thing out of the way. Obviously, we know reading a book on sexism does not make us experts on the female experience, so we read two books. All right, without further ado, here are our favorite three lessons from Invisible Women. Lesson one, don't rob women of credit. So there's this famous Viking skeleton called the Birka Warrior, and it's buried with these ancient weapons and two sacrificed horses. It's very epic, and it has a female pelvis. And for 100 years, archaeologists were like, that's not a girl, it has a sword. And so even though there are all these like Viking legends about female warriors, archaeologists said those were just mythical embellishments. So finally, 2017, they did a DNA test, and sure enough, the skeleton's a woman, and some archaeologists were like, okay, well, maybe she's in the wrong grave.
Are you serious?
Yes.
I love that that couldn't possibly, she was probably, you know, just cleaning the sword for her husband.
No, they seriously taught, like, one of the critics of that school of thought in archaeology points out that archaeologists have disproportionately found more male Vikings than females by a wide margin. And he's like, the numbers don't really add up there. Anyway, one of the main points of this book is we're very good at not giving credit to women. So Watson and Crick are famous for discovering DNA, but almost no one knows about Rosalind Franklin, who played this huge role. And in fact, James Watson was pretty sexist to her in his biography. And some people claim that Watson looked at her work without her permission, and that was a big part of what sparked their insight. Felix Mendelssohn was this famous composer, but it turns out six of his pieces were actually composed by his sister Fanny. So she was consigned to irrelevance for being a woman, whereas he gets to be irrelevant because he did classical music.
I have to say, Felix and Fanny sounds like a Nickelodeon Saturday show. All right. Lesson two, let's narrow down the data gaps, or data gaps, if you're a person who says envelope and apricot.
What was that second word?
Apricot.
Apricots.
Yeah, it's so crazy to me if you say apricot. Like when you go to the zoo, are you like, oh, look at the gorillas and the apps?
It always bugs me that that Gershwin song is like, I say tomato, you say tomato. Like one of those is clearly wrong.
Yeah.
The tone of that song is like, can't we disagree on these equally correct things? It's like, no.
So what, I've never heard someone say tomato unless they were reciting that cliche.
Uh-huh.
So Perez tells the story of when Sheryl Sandberg, who's the current COO of Facebook, when she was working at Google and pregnant with her first child, she announced that Google needed pregnancy parking at the front of the building. And she admitted that she didn't realize they needed it until she started experiencing her own aching feet. So Sandberg
is Facebook, right?
Yeah. I said the current COO of Facebook, but when she was working.
Oh, I thought you said Google. Oh, when she was at Google, sorry.
Didn't you say at the beginning of this that you were a great listener?
To women.
So that's an example of a data gap, right? Like a piece of information that would be helpful to some, but that doesn't make it to those in charge. And there are a lot of them in fields that have been traditionally dominated by men. And imagine why before Sandberg, no man for sure had ever come up with a pregnancy parking idea.
And she highlights that there aren't just data gaps across men and women. In this case, there was a data gap across non-pregnant women and pregnant women, in that Sandberg herself didn't even think of it until she was pregnant.
So she also references like modern tech buildings in Silicon Valley, where like either the doors are too heavy to open easily, or even glass stairs that make it easy to see up a skirt. It's unintentional, but it's just something that a male architect doesn't think to think about when designing a workspace that would work for him. Another example of a data gap for me is that the airport in Ontario, California was obviously not designed by a frequent flyer because I've been fortunate enough with my job to travel a lot, asterisk 2020. And if you've been to an airport like between midnight and 6 a.m., you know that it's filled with people who are just trying to sleep in like the most unnatural positions possible, like using their carry-on as a pillow, or it's like sitting down and bending over their suitcase to sort of guard it. It's like people who are trying to sleep on Tetris pieces. So there's like this unspoken rule that you just need to be quieter during that time. But in the Ontario airport, there's this one long corridor that's floored with thousands of one-inch tiles, which means that the one time that I went there to catch a red eye walking past the most miserably tired people you've ever seen, I had to drag my suitcase with its tiny wheels just going like for a quarter mile. I'm just whispering like, sorry. So did you have an example, like a data gap that you've experienced?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like you do. We've talked about some of these data gaps before, how like J.K. Rowling tested Harry Potter on a ton of adult publishers who are all like, yeah, this doesn't work. And then one of them tested it on his actual child. And she was like, this is amazing. And then he bought the rights. Sarah Blakely, the founder of Spanx, tried to pitch Spanx to all these male factory owners and none of them bit. And then finally one showed it to his daughters and they were like, oh, this is amazing. You have to get behind this. I've seen in my own life. So my group of comedian friends, we were pitching this show. We kind of pitched it as we want to be the Pixar of comedy, where it's like, you know, adults and kids can watch it together and hopefully it's funny enough for the adults and clean enough for the kids, was kind of how we pitched it. And we pitched it to all these people in Hollywood who just were not looking for that personally and kind of didn't get it. So we just turned around and told our fans, and we crowdfunded $1 million in a relatively short period of time, just because we were speaking to people who actually got it. Mm.
So the solution is to narrowing these data gaps. Let's have travelers design airports. Let's have children review children's books. And if a woman isn't designing an office building, maybe the architect could at least talk to one.
Okay, lesson three. The golden rule only gets you so far. So I want to start with a little example. Think about left-handed people. Lots of left-handed people hate using scissors or school desks or guitars or chainsaws because all those things are usually designed by right-handed people and they just don't work for lefties. And what's funny about the situation is that those right-handed designers are following the golden rule. They're basically saying, I'm going to give you exactly what I would want. And that works great if both the giver and the receiver are alike, but it's not as great if they're really different. So One of the main points of this book is, in so many different fields, men are the decision makers, and they often try to follow the golden rule, and they say, okay, this is exactly what I would want. And then women are like, yeah, that doesn't work for me.
My son is left-handed, and my wife recently took him to the dentist. And when the hygienist found out that he was left-handed, she said, oh, that's great. Did you know that left-handed people are smarter than right-handed people? Well, and at first, yeah.
It's because all those scissors and chainsaws killed off the dumb ones.
So my wife thought at first that she was just like really trying hard with bedside manner.
Imagine a doctor whose bedside manner is telling you dishonest compliments.
Like, turns out she was very serious because she was left-handed too. And it was one of those situations where, like, you don't want to correct someone who currently has, like, sharp instruments in your child's mouth.
Let's talk about some examples of that sort of golden rule problem as it applies to men and women. So crash test dummies were invented in the 50s, and they have almost always been male. And then finally in 2011, we were like, oh, we should start testing for women too. So we made a female dummy that was just a smaller version of the male dummy. And that's having a real effect on people. If a woman gets in a car wreck, she's 47% more likely to be seriously injured than a man, 17% more likely to die. And it's worse for pregnant women. We don't even have a seatbelt that really works for pregnant women.
I may have mentioned before that I have this growing Google Doc that I've made. It's a list of dumb bands that have great names, and crash test dummies is on the top of that list. Other ones are Guns N' Roses.
So here's another example. This company was making female Viagra, and people realized, oh, this may have side effects with alcohol. So the company's like, you're right, we'll test it. And they tested it on 23 men and 2 women. So the takeaway for me is, if you're making decisions that affect women, there should be women in the room, or you're just going to miss big things. The golden rule doesn't help you if you're very different from the people you're trying to make decisions for.
So it's crazy, too, that Perez mentions in the book that medicine is tested mostly on men. And even when they test on animals, it's male animals.
Well, I remember Maya Dusenberry talks about in the book Doing Harm how part of the reason that so few clinical trials historically have been done on women is that doctors were always arguing, oh, their hormonal cycle will affect the way that the medicine works. So look at that two ways. If it's not true, and apparently there's evidence suggesting that in many cases it's not, then you're excluding women for no reason. If it is true, then before you sell those drugs to millions of women, wouldn't it be nice to know how their hormonal cycle interacts with the effects of the drug? It'd be like if those crash test dummy people were like, we can't test these seatbelts on female crash test dummies. Their hips are different. It'll interact weirdly with the seatbelt. And it's like, well, shouldn't you know how it interacts weirdly?
It's like, I love that Perez has a chapter in the book called One Size Fits Men. I mean, I felt like I could relate with that because I have small hands. I had a server at a comedy club one time after a show. He told me that my fingers were wispy, and I have been self-conscious ever since. Well, and this has been my complaint about iPhones too, and that's the crazy thing about, in essence, making men the default human. My favorite iPhone was the 5. That was a perfect size for me. But after that, they kept getting bigger and bigger. It took them until now, it took them 7 more generations of iPhone to give us an option that's back down to the 5 size, even though they've had the data for years that more women buy iPhones than men.
Wow.
And that...
Yeah, and she talks in the book about how they're building iPhones that are designed for the hand size of men and not for women.
And I feel like I can speak on behalf, it just in this case, as having hands that are women size.
Kellen Wispy hands, we call them. Well, and she also talks about voice recognition technology, how it recognizes male voices easier than women's voices.
Yeah, that was funny too, because it's not in a good way. It's that men tend to slur their speech more than women. So yeah, if you're a woman and you're trying to get Siri to play a song, just act drunk. just to finish this medicine thing, over 2 million women a year take Valium for conditions ranging from anxiety to epilepsy. And it's been aggressively marketed to women for decades. But a 2003 paper revealed that it had, up until then, it had never been tested on female subjects.
No.
It just, that's a problem, because like you were saying, like Paris cites in the book, study after study showing that there are differences, sex differences, gender differences in reactions to medication. So the takeaway here is that women aren't just scaled down men.
Okay, you're a dude. Imagine you bought a jock strap and you needed it for some sort of dangerous activity. And right before you use it, they're like, oh, by the way, this has only been tested on women.
10 out of 10 women say, yeah, this supports me just fine, I guess.
All right, random facts. So she points out that when Marvel reinvented Thor as a woman, fans freaked out, but no one uttered a peep when Thor was replaced by a frog.
During my shows, I used to ask people what their high school mascot was. And there was one high school where their mascot was, they were the Supermen. And so then I asked them, I was like, yeah, but I mean, how do you, what? So your softball team has to be the Superwomen? And they said, no, the softball team was the Lady Supermen. It's just so obvious that it's a bunch of dudes coming up with these names. Yeah, that sounds right.
She talks about that in the book, how they have done these studies where when you talk in the generic male, like when you say, mankind has done this, or man has accomplished this, or even when you say things like guys or dude, which I say all the time, mm-hmm. people interpret that as being more about men than about women. So if you post a job listing and you speak in the generic male, like the applicant should be able to do this and he should be able to do that, then you'll see more men respond and fewer women respond than if you had just posted something generic, like saying they. So I learned that, and for a while I tried to stop saying guys, but I did not stick with it. I do think in order for this to take, that we need better gender neutral alternatives to you guys. Because gang sounds like you're a dad wearing a fanny pack. Mm-hmm. Y'all sounds like you think you're Southern, but you are not.
I just say comrades. And lady comrades. One of the crazy statistics from the book, worldwide, 96% of murderers are men.
Wow.
It sounds surprising, but I also feel like I could have figured that out by just scrolling through Netflix.
So this one was crazy. One of the strongest predictors of whether you'll become a world famous pianist is how big are your hands? And obviously that disfavors women. So this man with small hands came up with a solution, which is he just made a skinnier piano.
How much is this piano? I bet I could play the harp really well. So there's a chapter in the book called A Sea of Dudes, which it's actually where all the guys come from in that song, It's Raining Men.
It's part of the male precipitation cycle. So I learned from this book that in India, on average, women spend 5 hours a day on housework and men spend 13 minutes. And what kills me is that's so specific that you know the men were still counting theirs. Like, hey, I did 13 minutes. What is that, nothing?
So nurses are subjected to more acts of violence than police officers.
Oh, man.
And this is true. Like, ask any nurse and they have so many stories about it. My grandmother does, because one time she slapped a nurse. So I asked my sister-in-law about this, who is a nurse. When I said, do you have any stories? She was basically like, how much time do you have? Which is so incredibly scary and crazy that we haven't done more like to protect them. So she's been, when she was pregnant, a patient stuck her with a dirty needle of medicine that pregnant women cannot be on.
Oh my gosh.
At one point,
And I think the book says that it happens more to female nurses, right? Female specifically?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, gosh.
One time they were treating a teenage boy who is, he'd been in an ATV accident. And every day he had to have these wounds, like very painfully redressed. And he was headbutting the nurses.
Oh,
and this
man.
Is a kid with like full mental capacity. She said nobody.
Well, not so much that he avoided ATVs.
One time, nobody got hurt in this situation, but she said that they had a patient in the ER who was from a local jail who they were treating. At one point, he got out of his handcuffs and climbed into the ventilation. So they had to lock down the hospital and get this guy out.
Is it bad that my first response to that is like, oh, so that would work?
This is all crazy to me because in any other occupation, you would press charges on a customer who stabbed you.
Right.
But for some reason in the medical profession, they just like, they have to accept it as, well, what are you going to do? Like, this is their job. It's no one else's job to have to put up with that with no legal repercussions and to not have more protection. It just blows my mind. So one of the solutions that Perez brings up in the book is that she brings up that many acts of violence are triggered by long wait times, which I have to say, like, I've waited in a hospital before. But I've never thought to like hit someone with a chair because of it.
But maybe next time you will.
Well, now that I know they're expecting it.
And I bet part of the reason you and I are so surprised is that we're not female nurses. And so we're just not exposed to it. Like right. She talks about how catcalling happens so often, but women aren't usually catcalled when men are walking with them. And so boyfriends and husbands will be like, well, I never see it. So they'll come away thinking that it's not a problem. And so I wonder if something very similar is happening there.
This is very much like growing up in a white family whose parents right. are like, I don't know what everyone's problem is. Racism doesn't exist anymore.
No one's ever been racist to me. My most embarrassing nurse story is that one time I got a surgery and I was staying overnight at the hospital and a nurse came in to check up on me. And I was just in the act of thinking like, oh, she's pretty cute, when she started draining my huge catheter bag.
So
hard to make your move.
As you can see, I hydrate well. Something too that that's a seemingly simple solution to a problem. She mentioned that in one instance in a hospital in the UK, the patient call bell, the bathroom assist bell, and the staff emergency bell all made the same sound in the nurse's station.
Oh, no.
So if you this would be like, imagine you're at home, you hear a beeping noise, and you're thinking, all right, either my hot pocket's done or we're all breathing carbon monoxide.
Which honestly, with hot pockets, same thing. So another thing I learned from the book. So BCG did a study where they found the average female business owners get less than half the investment male business owners get, but they make more than twice the revenue. And also for every dollar of funding, female-owned startups generate 78 cents and male-owned generate 31 cents. So those disparities are insane to me. But if that's true and if that pattern holds, I don't know why there aren't more like female-led VC firms targeting like female-led startups. It seems like that would be a pretty great business model if those numbers hold across the board.
Yeah. I need to start a startup with these lady hands.
Lady Hands, LLC.
This is my last one here. So something that made me laugh in the book, she said that women tend to assess their intelligence accurately, while men of average intelligence think they are more intelligent than 2/3 of all people, which I was laughing, but then it made me realize like, oh, I'm probably average.
I've had that thought before where I'm, well, not about you, but I've had the thought before, like, I know a lot of women with imposter syndrome. I don't know any men, but I know some men who should have it. All right, to recap, our three favorite lessons from Invisible Women. Number one, don't rob women of credit. Number two, let's narrow down data gaps. Number three, the golden rule only gets you so far.
And number four, seriously, like, I can't even palm a softball.